وإذا قيل لهم لا تفسدوا في الأرض قالوا إنما نحن مصلحون، ألا إنهم هم المفسدون ولكن لا يشعرون. الله سبحانه وتعالى declares in the Holy Quran that when it is said to them, do not spread corruption on the earth, their reply is, we only seek to put things right. Beware, they indeed are those who spread disorder and corruption, but they realize it not. Last week we introduced the subject of transhumanism in the context of the COVID-19 vaccine program, which is to be rolled out soon, probably towards the end of December, at the very latest next year, March. And amongst the many dangers, as we've discussed over many weeks, is the fact that it is an mRNA vaccine, and that will lead to also DNA vaccines, which ultimately edit the human gene and create a form of, potentially, a form of human life that hitherto has never been known. We talked at some length about the potential dangers in the context of basic human rights and freedoms, civil liberties and the like, and the invasive nature of the dystopian government orchestrated, or you could say now it's supra-government orchestrated, micromanagement of human life. Today, inshallah, we'll focus specifically on transhumanism, knowing full well that the COVID-19 supposed epidemic has become the perfect justification for what otherwise would have never been accepted by the bulk of humanity. For those of you who were here last week, transhumanism refers to the process of supposedly improving the quality and length of human life. And this is done by biotechnological interventions, nanotechnology, cybernetic mechanisms, and gene therapies and the like. So all of those generally are subsumed under the broad head of transhumanism. And this certainly presents one of the greatest challenges to insan brought about by godless modernity. And it is here where Muslims are called upon to offer leadership, given that as Muslims we are the arbiters between truth and falsehood. The Quran is Al-Furqan, and we are those who uphold what is just, and we are those who challenge injustice. Transhumanism represents the greatest injustice, as we will shortly see. In any event, it begins with a rosy picture painted, as we mentioned last week. Transhumanists believe, according to their evolutionary theory, that current human beings represent nearly one stage in an evolutionary process. And they believe that we will continue evolving, and that transhumanism is just a means whereby we can expedite that process. They believe, therefore, that all the vagaries that have plagued humanity over the centuries, injustice, inequality, disease, contagion, death, will all be eradicated through scientific advances and the modifying of the human species. There were others, obviously, who offered less optimistic views or predictions. People like Bertrand Russell lays out a very dark dystopian future in which free will, in which human motivation and drive are severely stunted by biotechnology and oppressive psychological practices stunting human agency. George Orwell writes his book, 1984, and he makes the frightening case about also the potential misuse of science and technology to enslave the masses. The transhumanists essentially see the human body and mind as limiting our full capabilities. And they believe that the process of applied transhumanist practice, namely nanotechnology, cybernetics, pharmacology, and gene therapy, are ways whereby we can break free from the cage of our mortal physical biology. They say, for example, that nanotechnology is already being used within such areas as bioengineering, biophysics, biochemistry. Those in those fields know the potential for this technology. And when utilized in the service of transhumanism, nanotechnology offers, for example, microscopic implants that monitor our bodily functions. They can diagnose illness. They can know you better than you know yourself. Cybernetics focuses on bridging the gaps between human biological processes with technological tools. and there's the process of implanting computer interfaces, whereby not only can you control electrical devices remotely, but you can actually be controlled by them too. The pharmacological applications in the context of transhumanism involves improving supposedly our cognitive function using all these pharmacological substances. Modafinil is one example. It's called the smart drug, and it supposedly promotes wakefulness, memory, clarity of thought, and it's very popular among students at universities. So they say this is a prefiguration of the potential of pharmacological application for transcending our human limitations. This is gene therapy as well. As we know, gene therapy involves the process of replacing supposedly faulty or ailing genes with healthier ones. What the transhumanists say is that we can see these processes go beyond treating just faulty genes, but actually modifying genes altogether, improving the genetic makeup of human being who otherwise possesses supposedly a healthy set of genes, and also to allow for the selection of supposed desired characteristics. The term designer babies is something we've all come to know. This is into public consciousness. And gene therapies allow us actually to develop a type of offspring, a child who can jump higher, who can remember better, who can grow taller, and so on. So what they say is that we have the technology, and the development of these technologies are now becoming ever so more widespread, and there's a need for us as human beings to embrace them in expediting our evolutionary advancement. And all of this obviously is critical, particularly for Muslims who are rooted in Dinul Fitra, the religion of nature. And any affront to nature, any altering of the order of nature, certainly is an affront to the Muslim and is a challenge to our worldview. Now, up to this stage, we've just been describing processes. But very quickly we discover that transhumanism actually represents not just a process, but actually a new religious order. It's another religious challenge, as Muslims have faced so many religious challenges in the past. Over 75% of transhumanists actually are atheists. And atheism is a dogma. It's not really rooted in any empirical science. It's a philosophical proposition. When you closely examine the themes contained within transhumanism as a branch of atheism, you find that the language even that the transhumanists employ suggests that transhumanism is in fact a religious movement. And I'll give you some examples. And then we'll go into the appropriate Islamic response both to the religious proposition as well as obviously the processes that it seeks to impose on humanity. So what does transhumanism seek to address? At the most fundamental level, they seek to address fundamental and ultimate questions about purpose. Religion generally assumed authority in that space, defining purpose, meaning, where you come from, what you're doing here, where you go to, destiny. The second thing about transhumanism is that it claims to be comprehensive, giving the answers to all questions. Similarly, religion makes that claim. It gives answers to all questions. The Quran is unequivocal in that you will find in the Quran tafsil al-kulli shay, an explanation of all things. And although transhumanism makes these bold claims, which only religion in the past would make, it's not necessarily associated with specific rituals, although you may very quickly see certain, you could say, ritual processes being put into place. So the transhumanism of the 21st century contains within it a vision of how human beings ideally should be. Muslims and Christians and even Hindus have a notion of the archetypal human being. We have in the Prophet of Allah, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, uswatan hasana, the archetypal perfect being. We find in the classical age of Hinduism a conception of human perfection. We find even in the age of the Christian fathers a notion of what the ideal human being should or should not be. So transhumanists make a similarly religious claim. They claim to be able to define a vision of how humans ideally should be. So we very quickly discover something not rooted in nature or science, an objective assessment of the natural order, but a subjective assumption of how it should be and its purposes. This is religion. And also, we find other similarities between religious and transhumanist aspirations. So, what does the transhumanist attempt to ultimately achieve? Well, by their own words, a godlike being of infinite knowledge, an escape of the flesh and this limited world, transcendence, an uploading of the mind, a moment of transfiguration whereby we change from this mortal self into an immortal angelic being. Seems more akin to what a Christian or Muslim would describe of the hereafter. It talks about end of days and the termination of history, human history. Seems a lot like the apocalypse of the Christians or the malhama as described in the hadith. These seem to be prophetic statements. Even if these prophets work for Google and Facebook and Amazon, it's religious speak. It's not really rooted in science as we understand. Also, they talk consciously and unconsciously about all these religious ideas and themes, and in all their narratives, in all their discussion, even in their planning and their hope of a future, a utopia for humanity, similar to a Christian kingdom of heaven on earth. This seems to be religious speak on the tongue of people who supposedly claim to be scientific, empirical. We call it a god. They call it an AI system that will usher in this utopia. Another similarity is the goal of transhumanism. As we mentioned, religion ultimately sees in the end of human history ascension into heaven and eternity in paradise. The transhumanist reaches out for a paradise on earth. Ultimately, it seems exactly the same vision of human destiny. One operationalized through the unseen forces of the divine, the world of the soul, the ruh. Another operationalized through a digital transcendence, an AI vision of human perfection. Now, transhumanism is really a movement from religious thinking to another form of religious thinking. It is an alternative religious worldview. It is a pseudoscience. And it locates human meaning and purpose and ultimate human fulfillment at some undisclosed point in the future. Now, how do we as Muslims respond in the context of mRNA vaccines, in the context of altering the genome, in the context of embracing modern technologies under the guise of transhumanist philosophy? Islam is by no means a religion of superstition. Islam is by no means a religion that is opposed to the empirical sciences. Islam was, in fact, the progenitor of modern science. A Muslim's worldview is located in the transcendent, knowing his purpose, his place in the scheme of being. He conforms to Allah's will, to his intent. In other words, is congruous with the cosmic norm, with nature. Hence, the Muslim scientist sees himself as a functionary of nature, Allah's Khalifa, as the one who does the will of Allah on earth. So the Islamic and the secular scientists certainly at opposite ends. Our values diverge, and given that Muslims derive their ethical values from Wahi, our purpose and function simply is not to be God on earth. It is to be Ibadullah, the servants of Allah on earth, His agents. Transhumanists do not believe in a God. They do not believe in revelation. They certainly don't see themselves as agents, but rather as masters of the universe, as gods incarnate. Most importantly, they certainly don't see meaning. All they see is ego. In other words, they see themselves as humanist, where the human being is located in the center of the universe. He is the absolute measure of value. Not religion, not revelation, not a prophet, not a sacred law, but he is the measure of value and he is also therefore the determiner of value. This represents an elaborate attempt to create a new reality for the human being, and a reality that is at odds clearly with those who believe in a wise, caring and vigilant creator from whose sight and gaze nothing escapes. There is therefore meaning, there is therefore purpose, there is therefore wisdom. We seek to understand the meaning, the purpose, and the wisdom, and therefore to conform ourselves to it. The transhumanist, as the word suggests, seeks to transcend it. Now, one of the most pertinent ayat of the Quran relevant to this is found in Surah Ar-Rahman. وَالسَّمَاءَ رَفَعَهَا وَوَضَعَ الْمِيزَانَ. And the heavens, the universe, as we see it, Allah has raised and imposed a strict balance, immutable laws that govern everything from the largest galaxies to the smallest subatomic particles. There is mizan, there is balance. Allah tatghaw fil mizan, and that you too should not transgress that balance. وَاقِيمُ الْوَزْنَ بِالْقِسْطِ, and that you should establish due justice. وَلَا تُخْسِرُ الْمِيزَانِ, and never make deficient the balance. In other words, not just in the context of financial dealings should there be just weight and measurement, but also in the way that we assess all affairs, especially ideas, which is the currency of the age. Now, these verses refer to certainly the balance of justice, but also the balance within nature and the laws of nature. لَا تَطْخَوْ فِي الْمِيزَانِ. Do not transgress against these laws and this very finely tuned balance. Even within the atom, there are four forces that we are aware of, and they are very finely balanced. And it is impossible for that to have come about by chance. And this has perplexed astrophysicists, particularly in the context of what was supposedly the chaos of the Big Bang. So there is fine law and balance. Now, this ayah is relevant to transhumanism when it comes to especially genetic interventions. Such interventions, we know, will irreparably undo a very delicate balance that exists within nature. The effects of imbalance created by human beings are actually all around us. We see it. The extinction of animal species, the biocidal nature of the modern turbo-capitalistic world, the exploitation of the natural resources, the disparity and imbalance in the distribution of resources, the scarcity of even fresh water, and very soon, in fact, the scarcity of fresh air. Now, all of these developing crises were initiated by so-called scientific progress. I like to call it scientific arrogance and myopia, which has not considered all the consequences of their short-sightedness. And by the time the dangers were actually discovered, the damage was already done, and we have the world in the rot that it is currently. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala describes this state of affairs. وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ لَا تُفْسِدُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. When it is said to them, do not cause corruption in the earth, do not upset the balance. What does the kafir say? قَالُوا إِنَّمَا نَحْنُ مُسْلِحُونَ. We are only those who wish to set it right. We wish to improve it. We wish to correct what we arrogantly assume to be imperfections in the order of nature or the design of Allah. Ala innahum humul mufsidun, know that they certainly are the corruptors. Walakin la yash'urun, but in their arrogance, they don't even realize that. Their arrogance blinds them. Let alone playing with the environment. Playing with human genes is a step into something that is still not fully understood. And errors at this level will lead to a type of catastrophic fallout that we could not even begin to imagine. Anyone see I Am Legend? He talks about a future dystopia in which a runaway virus has transformed the human being into a zombie-like creature. And this comes specifically as a consequence of a type of vaccination program. Now, again, this is not a place to talk about predictive programming and what happens in Hollywood and it, the synergy between the, you know, the movie maker and the CIA and whatever the latest agenda may be by the multinational banks, but that's something you can read up on. What's important is the catastrophic fallout, which any geneticist will be well aware of, and it's surprising as to how silent the scientific fraternity has been in calling out the potential danger of these mRNA vaccines. But that being said, errors at this level are certainly to be catastrophic. What is most interesting in these ayat is the command not to make deficient the balance. Now, this verse suggests that human beings will reach a stage where they can upset that balance, when they can create a deficiency, when they can alter his order. And we are in the midst of that stage of history. Now, we shouldn't be too proud of how right Revelation was and was able to predict the future and then try to score naughty points against our co-religionists. But rather, we need to take this as a dire warning of the leadership that we should assume in guiding insan through probably what is the most dangerous epoch of human history and, as the hadith described, the most corrupted form of human society, the age of the Dajjal. We already see the ill effects of transgressing the balance of tatho fil mizan. Genetically modified organisms have been around for some time now as foods. And the entire science of GMO foods was actually based on transhumanist religious ideology, because we know it is a religion now. And the need to improve creation by way of genetic intervention was propounded by this religious assumption of leading us into some utopia. And we certainly know, after at least a decade or two of dabbling in genetically modified foods, a whole spectrum of ailments that have come to plague humanity, including blood toxicity that has never been seen in pre-GMO communities. There's all sorts of neurotoxicity that has become rampant as a consequence of consuming GMO foods, cancers, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, particularly amongst children, infertility, immune dysregulation, accelerated aging, respiratory diseases. There's so much more. I'm not going to go through the whole list. And these are peer-reviewed conclusions by supposedly reputable journals regarding the ill effects of GMO foods on human populations. Let alone genetically modified human beings, we've not yet got to grasp the ill effects of genetically modified plants and animals on the biosphere. So, the warning in the Quran stems from the sense of protecting insan and protecting our world from any alteration, any imbalance in Allah's order. So these ayat go beyond a warning of the harms that might come from transgressing the balance as well. There's a call also to intellectual responsibility and humility, because there's also a balance within the cerebral sphere, within intellectual endeavor. So there's, you could say, an epistemological balance. Balances that need to be kept in mind insofar as the emotional and psychological fallout of any alteration, because we believe that the human being is an embodied creature. We have a soul that is embodied, embedded within the physical self, the physical body. And the well-being of the physical body is contingent on the well-being of the soul, and symbiotically, the well-being of the soul is also contingent on the physical body. كُلُوا مِنَ الطَّيِّبَاتِ وَأَمَلُوا الصَّالِحَةِ. Eat what is wholesome and pure, and then do righteous deeds. Righteousness is directly associated in the Quran with one's physical well-being. So, there needs to be balance that a Muslim keeps in mind, not just insofar as the physical fallout within the natural world, within the biosphere is concerned, but also consciousness itself, the spiritual dimension of the human being, the emotional factors that have to be considered in our calculations when it comes to dabbling in the very building blocks of nature. So the entire philosophy of transhumanism is predicated on the aspiration of becoming suprahuman, superhuman. In fact, the word superman, ubermenschen, the entire idea, the comic book hero, was born of the transhumanism that was initially introduced into public discussion at the previous century by the futurists. Adolf Hitler, given that he's the bogeyman of the Western European, Adolf Hitler actually was a disciple of the futurist philosophies. Incidentally, the Green Movement was also born of the very same transhumanist assumptions. So the entire philosophy of transhumanism is predicated on this aspiration to be godlike, to deify the human race, to attaining ascendancy. And these are the words specifically that they use. Ascendancy, deifying the human race, superhuman prowess. And when we look at the Quran, we find a similar terminology. Thousands of years ago, إِنَّ فِرْعَوْنَ عَلَىٰ فِي الْأَرْضِ. Indeed, Fir'aun exalted himself in the earth. He sought ascendancy. He deified himself. He claimed superhuman prowess. The very same words that our transhumanists use today, verbatim, are the very same words from the tongue of Fir'aun. Coincidence? Conspiracy? Freemasonic? Transhumanism involves, in fact, a Fir'auni worship of the self. That is why, as Muslims, we view transhumanism not as a science, but actually as a religious worldview, at the very best, a pseudoscience. And additionally, there is also an underlying irrational assumption on the part of transhumanists that a limited biological organism like the human being, which is very limited, a speck in space, an ant in the grand scheme of things, this tiny little speck can achieve limitless conquests, not just in the universe, but in comprehending matters of the universe, and then subject the universe and dictate actually what reality should be. This is arrogance that probably even Fir'aun would be envious of. And if you look at European fiction, it's littered with these characters who transgress the balance. Remember Victor Frankenstein and his ill-thought-out scientific endeavors. Then if you go a little further back, the Greeks, Icarus and his unquenchable drive for more, until eventually his wings burn in the sun and he falls to earth. So the Quranic Fir'aun and Haman, these stories are not there to entertain us. We are the Ummah of end times. We are Ummatul Malhama, Ummatul Akhiriz Zaman. These are the ways in which the Prophet described us, the people of the end of history. We are the people that should take the challenge to these new age Fir'auns, the new Abu Jahl, the new Abu Lahab of the time. But specifically Fir'aun, there is no story told more often in the Quran than the story of Fir'aun and Musa. In fact, Imam Suyuti says, كَادَ الْقُرْآنَ أَن يَكُونَ مُوسَى. It is almost as if the Quran is the story of Musa. Why is there this emphasis on Fir'aun and the story of Musa? Hasn't that age passed? تِلْكَ أُمَّةٌ قَدْ خَلَتْ لَهَا مَا كَسَبَتْ وَلَكُمْ مَا كَسَبْتُمْ. Those are people of an ancient past. For them is what they have earned. And no, the Quran is for all times. So what does Fir'aun and Haman do? They attempt to attain a similar type of supremacy and engage in self-aggrandizement, a deification of the ego. وَقَالَ فِرْعَوْنُ يَا أَيُّهَا الْمَلَأُ مَا عَلِمْتُ لَكُمْ مِنْ إِلَهٍ غَيْرِي فَأَوْقِدْ لِي يَا هَامَانُ عَلَى الطِّينِ فَاجْعَلْ لِي صَرْحًا لَعَلِّي أَطَّلِعُ إِلَى إِلَهِ مُوسَى وَإِنِّي لَأَظُنُّهُ مِنَ الْكَاذِبِينَ. Fir'aun says to his chiefs, O chiefs, no God do I know for you but myself. I am God on earth. O Haman, O bankers, light me a kiln to bake bricks out of clay and build me a lofty palace. And I'll explain this specifically, bricks and palaces. What does that have to do with nanotechnology and genetically modifying organisms? That I may mount up to the God of Musa. But as far as I'm concerned, I think Musa is a liar. وَاسْتَكْبَرَ هُوَ وَجُنُودُهُ فِي الْأَرْضِ بِغَيْرِ الْحَقِّ وَظَنُّوا أَنَّهُمْ إِلَيْنَا لَا يُرْجَعُونَ. And they were no more than just arrogant and insolent in the land. Beyond reason, he and his armies, they thought that they would have not ultimately to return to us to be judged. Now the story of Musa and Fir'aun is one of the most frequently recurring stories in the Quran, as I mentioned. Fir'aun represents an archetype of the worst type of tyrant, the most arrogant, the most presumptuous, the most myopic. And he uses his power to inflict misery on his people, thinking himself as a god wishing to set matters aright, to improve. He is delusional. He's a narcissist. He's a humanist. That's a nice euphemism we use. Fir'aun transgresses boundaries. Therefore, what is Musa commanded to do? And what are you commanded to do? اذهب إلى فرعون إنه طغى. Go to Fir'aun. Indeed, he has transgressed. He has gone beyond the limits. He has upset the balance. He has altered the order. This transgression was certainly born of his delusional desire to conquer the divine, to set himself up as an equal to Allah, to establish his own religion, his own worldview, to become the ultimate determiner of value. Fir'aun says, أَنَا رَبُّكُمُ الْأَعْلَى. I am your Lord Most High, like the transhumanist would suggest. And this is due certainly to his narcissism, and this gives some insight into the heart and mind of the despotic ruler of all times, narcissism. The worship of the self, be yourself, it is the modern humanist. Fir'aun attempts to use the crafts of his age, to gain power over what lays before him of the world. And what does he do? The Egyptians, we know, are master builders. And he attempts to use their skill and their craft in gaining godly power and authority. And we see here a false belief that by way of his craft, his skill set, his technology, Pharaoh believes that he can even then conquer the heavens. Attaliyo ila ilahi Musa. I will ascend into the heavens of the God of Moses, and then settle myself firmly upon the throne. The entire humanist enlightenment project was effectively that, to abrogate and to settle upon the throne of God as the determiner of value. And thereafter to order the heavens and the earth in a way that reflects the ego, the nafs, the self. The fate of Pharaoh ultimately is well known. What happens? He is drowned, him and his people. And this continues to serve as a stark warning to those who pursue the delusion of self-deification. That is going to be your end. The German philosopher Nietzsche, one of the most influential philosophers of the modern age, declares, these are his words, human beings should embrace their own self-sufficiency, istighna. And the Quran specifically mentions istighna, this presumption of self-sufficiency, as the primary cause for rebellion and altering the order. So Nietzsche says, human beings should embrace their own self-sufficiency as Übermensch, Superman, declaring the death of God. But the declaration of independence from God will shackle him to his own delusional pursuit for greatness and conquest of nature. You will no longer be a slave of Allah. You become a slave of the nafs, the ego. And given the oppressively narrow horizons of the understanding of the self and the ignorance of the human being, this is a delusional pursuit for greatness and conquest of nature. By his very limitations and ignorance, it will be his undoing. The most dangerous men in human history have those who have not recognized their limitations. Sayyidina Ali used to say, the wisest person is he who knows that what he knows is nothing in comparison to what he knows not. And these people who thought that they needed no one and were not limited by any overarching cosmic rule, these were the ones that brought the greatest misery to humanity. The very first verse to be revealed warns us against the self-delusional, destructive attitude. Kalla. إِنَّ الْإِنسَانَ لَيَطْغَى. Indeed, man transgresses beyond the limit. He upsets the balance. أَرَّآهُ اسْتَغْنَى. Why? Because he sees himself as Nietzsche says, self-sufficient. إِنَّ إِلَىٰ رَبِّكَ رُجْعَى. Indeed, to your Lord is the return ultimately. Inshallah, we'll continue with this. It's a big subject because this is the biggest challenge. May Allah grant us hikmah and understanding and give us the tawfiq to rise to the challenge. وَآخِرُ دَعْوَانَا أَنِ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ.